Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Hey, mama. If you are a mom and are tired of the wash, rinse, repeat, burnout cycle of motherhood, this podcast is for you. If you feel lonely and isolated in your motherhood journey, this podcast is for you. If you feel like you have completely lost your identity since your babies were born, this podcast is for you. If you feel like every other mom has it together except for you, this podcast is for you. My name is Amanda, and I'm a life coach dedicated to teaching every mom the tools she needs to liberate herself off the back burner. I am living proof that a woman can be present and loving to her kids while also being a whole ass person outside of being that kid's mom. The secret? Learning when to say fuck it.
Hello, my beautiful mamas. And listeners to this podcast, because I recognize that not all of you are moms. And that means so much to me that this podcast is valuable to you, and that you still find encouragement and hopefully laughter, and that you spend your time with me, because whether you're a mom or not, your time is so precious and valuable. It's the one true asset that means the most in life. And so thank you for spending your time with me. It's been crazy over here for the last few months. As you can tell, I have not been podcasting. And if you follow me on any social media, you'll see that for the last, I don't even know, like 6 weeks, I haven't, well, I switched my focus to LinkedIn. So Instagram and Facebook has been crickets for a while. And LinkedIn has been crickets for about 6 weeks now. I've had a lot going on in my life, and I just needed to take a step back. And I am blessed and fortunate to be in a position where I can take a step back. And I recognize, I recognize how blessed I am. I recognize what is the word I'm looking for? Jesus. What is the word I'm looking for? Anyways, I recognize that not everybody is in a financial position to be able to take a step back when life gets really hard. You have to keep going. You have to keep showing up at work. You have to keep doing all of the things because you have to. I've been there myself, and I'm so grateful that right now I don't have to do that. It's still been hard to give myself the space to do that, because I just am a hard worker. I'm a person who has trouble separating my value and worth as a human from my productivity. It's something I've been working on for a while, and I'll probably always be working on those thoughts because it's so deeply ingrained in me, in my psyche. They'll probably always be there. And that's okay. It's not a problem, because thoughts are just sentences in your head, and emotions are just sensations in your body. None of them are problems. Anyways, that's quite the intro, Amanda. A podcast that has been really helping me in these last couple months when I've been really down has been the Low Life Podcast. With the host Lo Von Rumpf. It's a lifestyle podcast. Normally I listen to other life coach podcasts, because I just am always like wanting to improve myself, wanting to learn more, wanting to, grow my brain. But when life is really hard, you don't really want to grow your brain. You don't really want to think too much, because you're exhausted. I've just been I've been so emotionally tapped out, that the idea of like learning something new, no, thank you. I love the Low Life Podcast so much because he's just so sincere and he's so himself. He's so authentic. He's hilarious. And it's just such a mixed bag. You never know what topics he's going to cover. It could be like a deep dive on his new favorite crime documentary, which isn't really my thing. Or like a skincare expert or a celebrity guest or just some of his best friends coming on and they're just talking about life. It's just food for your soul though. And I love that. It's gotten me through this hard time in my life right now. So thank you, Lo, for your wonderful podcast. And go check it out if you haven't. If you don't know anything about it, if you've never heard of it, go check it out. I will drop a link to it in the show notes, the description, whatever you want to call it. The little box with all the words at the bottom of this episode. It'll be there. But it also helped me so much with not overthinking my podcast because I try so hard. I like everything in my business since I started it a little over a year ago, I've just been trying so, so hard. And, you know, it's good to put effort into things, obviously, but there's a balance there. And sometimes you can try too hard. And I know that I was definitely falling into that trap of just like trying way too hard to be valuable and not putting enough stock in the value of just being myself. The value in just having a space, this podcast, for people to come and feel held and to hear stories that sound so much like your life and it makes you feel seen and to laugh and cry with someone else. It doesn't always have to be like, I have to be sharing, you know, really well thought out thought work tools and life coaching skills. That's always going to be a part of this podcast because that's just who I am. I am a life coach. And that's another thing, just trusting like I am a life coach. It's going to come out of me. It always does. I have to restrain myself from coaching without permission, you know, like friends, because it's not always appropriate. And definitely need to have permission to coach somebody, but it's just how my brain works. And so because it's just how my brain works now, it's just, I take it for granted. I take just my normal thoughts and my normal processes and my normal life for granted. And I forget how extraordinary it actually is. And I forget to share it. I forget to share just the raw, honest truth of my day-to-day life as a single mom of four girls. And that is what I want to bring to this podcast this year and every year. That's really going to be my focus, is just showing up and being myself and trusting that it's enough. And I'm pretty sure I've already said that on episode in here before, but you know, lessons take a while to learn sometimes, which is why kids are technically kids for 18 years, you know? And we find ourselves saying the same goddamn things over and over and over again because it just takes time for time and repetition for lessons to sink in. It's okay that it's like that. Nothing has gone wrong. It's completely normal. Part of the human experience. So I wanted to share with you guys some of the books that I have been reading lately, because that's something that, some of you have been asking me about for a while, is putting together a book list, a recommendation list of books. Jesus, that did not come out right at all. Can I speak? I don't know. Okay. Side note, I will get back to books, but I just bought this mug for myself last night while I was shopping, and I love it so much. So if you're just listening to this podcast and you don't have the video like piece of it, there are, it's covered in a bunch of different dumpsters and all of them are on fire. And then on the inside of the mug, it says, everything's fine. I love this mug so much because I am always referring to anything going wrong in life as a dumpster fire. If you know me at all, if you've spoken to me in any capacity, I'm constantly, that's just my go-to analogy. I'm just like, my house is a dumpster fire. My life is a dumpster fire. The world is a dumpster fire. And so to find this mug, that's just all the dumpster fires. It makes me so happy. Oh my God. So happy. But anyways, right. Books. I almost forgot what I was about to talk about before I interrupted myself with my mug. And then I just looked here and it's just barely out of the frame of the video, but I just have this stack of books on my tiny ass desk right now. Like, how could I possibly forget? So, what I'm going to do today and what I'll probably do probably once a month is just talk to you guys here on the podcast about what books I'm reading. So, if you are new here or if you're just, new to me and my weirdness, I treat books like TV shows, like most people treat TV shows. So, you know, like you're at the end of your day and you flip the TV on because you just want to decompress a bit, because the kids are finally in bed and you know they're going to come out and bug you, but you know, you'll just tell them to fuck off and go back to sleep. And you ask yourself like, oh, what am I in the mood for? You know, maybe are you in the mood for like some reality TV, or do you need to just not think at all and you need just straight trash TV, something funny, like a thriller. And you're just like, what am I in the mood for tonight? So you have a couple, you know, more than one show that you kind of rotate through. I do the same with books. Okay. So, I don't think it's weird that I read like 6 books at a time. I just rotate through them. Everyone else thinks that I'm fucking weird. I'm not. It's the same thing that everyone else does with TV. So everybody can get off my ass about that. All right. So first up, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I have been slowly working my way through this book. She's a bit dense, but she's also really good. So it's all about money mindset and like a very practical way to manifest, I suppose. It was written in like the 20s or something. It's an old book. Looking for the copyright. Yeah, I don't know when it was written, but because it's just giving me like the modern one. It was not written in 2019. This book was just mass produced, this version of it in 2019. Anyways, it's really good. But the writing style is, you know, older. So that makes it a little bit slower to get through, at least for me. And also just the concepts are so like deep and heavy and big. It is definitely not something that you can just like binge, and that's okay. Just pick your way through it. But all the stuff that he's talking about in here, it's really, really good. So I do recommend this book, even though I'm not like, if you're watching the video again, I'm not even halfway, almost halfway through, but it's worth it. And I've heard so many people recommend this book. People like other coaches that I respect. It's good stuff. Okay, this one. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. So one of my best friends and I have been slowly, like so slowly for the last like 2 years, we've been rereading the Harry Potter series. And so we just did Half-Blood Prince recently. So the reason why we did this was because neither one of us had read through the books for like a decade, which makes me feel really old to be able to say something like that. But it's true. The last time I remember reading through the Harry Potter books, I was pregnant with Eowyn. So actually it's been over a decade because she is 13. It's been about 14 years. So I thought that I had remembered, still remembered most of the book details. I hadn't. I had forgotten so many. And the books are so much better than the movies. And I know every book nerd says this, but it's true. Okay. The books are just always better than the movies. Hands down. Always. Except for the fifth Harry Potter book, The Order of the Phoenix. Dear God, I still hate that book. And so does my friend. And we were both really curious when it was time for us to read through Order of the Phoenix. We were both just like, so I remember hating this book so much because it was so boring and long and Harry was being such a bitch. But I wonder if I have a different, like, you know, experience of it now, like 10 years later. Who knows? No, didn't. Harry is still a bitch. It's still way too long. It's a behemoth of a book. And when you get to the halfway point, it is only October of the school year. And we start the book in like July. And it's like, what the fuck? That book is just horrendous. So in that case, the movie is better than the book because they cut out all of the bullshit that J.K. Rowling put in there. I'm sorry, honey. I don't know what your editor was doing when you were writing that one. But The Half-Blood Prince, we haven't read the seventh book yet, but I think I can confidently say that The Half-Blood Prince is my favorite book. This book is perfect. As far as the Harry Potter series goes, it's perfect. I love this book so much. And the movie did not do it justice. I mean, all of the details with the Gaunt family, and if you are only a Harry Potter movie person and not a Harry Potter book person, you don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about right now. Voldemort's mother, her family, and her like sort of origin story, all of those details are in this book. And you have so many other pensive memories that Harry and Dumbledore examine that just add so much richness to the story. The movie, it just didn't cut it. So if you're a Harry Potter fan, whether you've read the books in the past or not, I highly recommend go back and reread the books because there's so much in there that you just forget. You just take for granted that the movies are good enough, and they are. The movies are good, but the books are so much better. So yes, if you are a Harry Potter person, go back and reread it. I love rereading a good book that's like a favorite. And if you also have favorite books that you love to go back and reread, please let me know. You can leave a review for this podcast, and the review can be anything. It doesn't have to be like your thoughts and opinions about the podcast. If it is, that's great. I'd love to hear about it. But share with me in the review section on Apple Podcasts or Spotify what your favorite books are that you love to go back and reread. And if I haven't read them yet, I'm going to add them to my list. So next up are a couple of romance books that I've read because, again, going through a phase where I'm just like, I just need comfort. Just need comfort right now. And the rom-com books just do that. This one, Funny Feelings by Tara DeWitt. I think this might be like my new favorite rom-com book. It's so good. It's about this female comedian. So already love it because we don't have enough female comedians. The female comedians that are out there do not get the publicity and the chance that male comedians get. If you're into stand-up comedy, this, I'm just going to have to go on my soapbox real quick. Support female artists, please. It's so much harder for females than it is for men in that in all sectors, but especially in that sector. Support funny women. Support funny women. Support funny women. Anyways, this book. So it's about a female comedian and her manager and their love story. They end up falling in love with each other. It's so sweet. And I really love seeing a female who is who's funny, but she's like, she's brass, right? She's not your typical heroine who's girl next door, she's crass. She's sassy. She's like the type of female that I am, and that you get told like you're just kind of like a bit much, right? Like guys like to hang out with you as a friend, but they're kind of intimidated by you all the time. And so what reading about her finding love, it was chicken soup to my soul. Go read this. I read it in like a weekend. I could not put it down. It was so good. And it was so funny too, obviously, because it's got a bunch of comedy in it. This next one, Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. Sorry, Casey. This has been around for a while. And then they made a movie based on it on Apple TV. So I haven't seen the movie because I'm not an Apple person. Going back to California in a few weeks for spring break. And I think my mom has Apple TV, so maybe I'll watch it on her TV while I'm out there. The book is so good. Oh my gosh, it's so sweet. It's so sweet. I love the one of the guys is like very... well, the American, of course. So it's, if you haven't heard of this book yet, it's about the son of the president of the United States, and the president of the United States in this book is a female. Thank you very much. And the son of, well, not the queen, because the queen in the book is just like Queen Elizabeth, where she's 100,000 years old and hasn't died. The grandson of the Queen of England and their love story. It's so good. And the American is just this like crass, sarcastic asshole that I relate to because I'm a crass, sarcastic asshole. It's really sweet. It's so well written. It's obvious. It's just like a different type of romance. It's a really smart. It's a really smart romance book. I love it so much. And I really love reading romance books that are LGBTQIA+. I've gotten into that in the last year or so. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it because I'm just like, well, I'm not a gay man. Like, how can I relate to this story? You can totally relate to the story because it's two people falling in love. That's all it is. I love this book. I actually... So I've like taken a break from dating because... I don't have the capacity. I don't have the capacity at all. But on my kid-free weeks, I've still been like taking myself out for a dinner. And so I went to Texas Roadhouse last month and it was packed. It's always packed, right? It was like a Friday night. And it I had to park in their overflow parking lot. I was like, oh, geez, man, that's a bad idea. Even as a single diner, you're going to have to wait forever for a spot at the bar. I only had to wait for about 20 minutes. And that's just the nicest thing about going to eat by yourself is it's you can get in really quickly, even on super busy nights when everyone else is waiting an hour plus for a table. Your ass can find a single seat at the bar pretty quickly. And it's kind of awesome. And I took my book with me. I was reading this one at the time, The Red, White, and Royal Blue. I took it with me because I don't like sports. I just don't. The only sport that I like is baseball. Even that, I'm not going to sit at the bar and like watch a baseball game. Because if I'm watching a baseball game, I want to watch like the whole thing. And I'm not going to sit at the bar for that long. It just doesn't do it for me. And it's always sports on TV at the bar. Also, I wasn't like trying to talk to other people. It's not why I go to the bar. I go to the bar to get some food, be around other people. I need something to do. I'm not a huge gamer. The only game I have on my phone that I play on a regular, semi-regular basis is Sudoku because I'm 100 and I like that game. So yeah, I brought my book to the bar and I sat there and I ate my steak and I read my book. But the bartender and one of the waitresses actually like was talking to me about the book. So it's honestly a conversation starter too. And it's just who I am. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to take a book to the bar because that's what I want to do. And if you want to judge me, fine, judge me. But I also know you're a little jealous because you want to be able to have that confidence to just do whatever you want at the bar. Oh, God. I'm reading this one right now. I'm not done with it yet. Maybe next time, by Seska Major. This was a gift from one of my kiddos for Christmas. I think Laurelyn got me this one and another one. And she's so cute. She got me a book for my birthday a few birthdays ago called Little Fires Everywhere. I forget the author's name. That book is amazing. Go get it. It's kind of got like a mysterious feel. It also has some really important like social dynamics that are being explored and motherhood dynamics that are being explored. And it's just a really beautiful piece. So go read that. I wasn't as big of a fan of the TV show. It just like all things for me, the book is just always better. But Little Fires Everywhere, also highly recommend. But anyway, Laurelyn got me that book, Little Fires Everywhere. And it was in Reese's book club. So now whenever she picks books out for me, it has to have that sticker because that's like her cue for, oh, mom will definitely like this book because it has this yellow sticker on it. She's so cute. I love her so much. I'm almost done. I almost finished it last night, but I was tired. And it was like 10 o'clock. So I went to sleep. I'm still unsure about this one. The writing is really good. It's a Groundhog Day style book. And it's about this woman who is reliving the same day over and over again. But at the end of the day, her husband dies every single time. Just the sheer level of grief that this poor woman has to hold every day for months. She's been stuck in this hell for 5-ish months. It's just really heavy. So I don't know if it's just like my current mood of just like I need comfort right now where it's not really like jiving with me, but it's just so heavy. So it's a question mark for me with this book. It is very good. So if that's kind of like your cup of tea, your style, go ahead and grab it. Reese Witherspoon obviously gave her seal of approval. I read one book that was in Reese's book club last year that I didn't like at all. What was it called? I'm going to look it up on my phone really quick. So also I'm psychotic now and I'm on Goodreads logging my books and the progress of where I'm at. Like, Jesus, who am I? I used to make fun of my friend for having this app. Now here I am, fucking hypocrite. The Guest List by Lucy Foley. So it was a mystery suspense, a whodunit murder thing. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I don't know. I couldn't really relate to any of the, I couldn't like get emotionally invested with any of the characters. And so when it was over, I was just kind of like, eh. So, you know, sometimes Reese lets me down. Overall, though, I tend to like the books that she puts on her book club. So perhaps I will enjoy maybe next time. We'll find out tonight. I'll finish it just to be done with it. I hope that this woman gets out of this hell of losing her husband every night. God, that's just so it's just so traumatizing. It's just so mean to do that to your character. I think that's like where I'm at right now with this book. It's just evil to do that. And lastly, is another book that I'm currently reading. I have not finished this yet. It's called Reclaiming Body Trust, A Path to Healing and Liberation by Hillary Kinnevy and Dana Stewart Vaunt. Last names are hard, but this is an excellent book. It's about, exactly what the title says it is. Learning how to trust your body, learning how to inhabit your body, and appreciate it and love it and not constantly question it and shame it and, shit on it all the time. Learning how to intuitively eat after a lifetime of restricting yourself and going on crazy diets. Just getting back to the very human basic of my body knows what it needs. I just need to learn how to listen to my body when it tells me, hey, I need this food today and this much food today. And tomorrow I will need this food and this much food. And trusting your body to find its natural weight and that it's where you're supposed to be, and that you're still healthy no matter what your size is, because size does not determine your health. It's a really good book. It's very well researched. They really did a lot of research. They have all the footnotes in there, citations. They're very smart women. It's very good. I highly recommend it if you're on the path of healing with your body and wanting to trust your body and love your body and finally feel at home in your body. It's a really good one. So there you have it. Some of the books that I am recommending right now. I hope you guys check them out and that you enjoy them. And please let me know what books you're reading right now. What your favorite books are that you go back to, however many times, or how you go back to every X amount of years. Because I want to know what they are. So another thing that I've gotten into very recently, like in the last week or 2 weeks, I don't know, whatever, it doesn't matter, is these documentaries on Disney Plus about the story behind Disneyland Park and Disney World, all the Disneyland parks and all the different rides and attractions, the story of how the Imagineers like started and began and their journey throughout the history of the company. Because after Walt Disney died, with each new CEO, the department of the Imagineers really went up and down. They went on a roller coaster ever since. It's so inspiring. The amount of hustling that Walt Disney had to do to do all the things that he did in his career, but especially with the park, was so inspiring because everybody thought that he was crazy. At the time, amusement parks were really dirty. They weren't popular. It just wasn't a part of any culture in the United States at all. And so for him to come up with this grand idea for this big amusement park for families, his wife, when he told her his idea, she even said, "Why would you want to do that? Those places are disgusting." And he was like, "No, mine won't be." And just being the person with this vision that no one else can see because it's in your head and no one else gets because no one has ever done it before. There's nothing to point to say, it's going to be like this, what this person did, but this is how I'm going to elevate it, or this is how mine's going to be different. There was nothing like that for him. No bank wanted to touch him at all. He was a filmmaker. And they were just like, just stick to your films, buddy. Go grab some more Oscars. That's what you're good at. No banks wanted to touch him. he ended the first investment for Disneyland actually came from ABC because network television was just becoming a thing with consumers having TVs in their houses and stuff. And the networks were struggling, the TV networks. They were struggling a lot with getting the audience that they needed. And so Walt made a deal with ABC Network and said, we will do your programming if you financially invest into this park. And so that was the first $5 million investment in Disneyland Park. Now, the total investment, I think, cost him like $17 million back in the day, which I pulled out an inflation calculator because I'm such a nerd and I just like knowing these things. The modern day equivalent is about $197 million to start Disneyland. But then he used ABC platform to promote his park. He did so many episodes of like the planning phases and the construction phases. And then they live streamed on the opening day of Disneyland. They live streamed it. And because he had built up all this momentum and because he needed to educate people about what Disneyland even was, right? Because again, amusement parks weren't a thing back then, or they were, but they were really dirty and gross and just like, oh, people had no interest in them. So really, his version of an amusement park was totally new. No one had ever seen it. He needed to educate his audience in order to turn them into customers. And he used this deal with ABC to not only be the initial financiers for his park to get the damn thing built, but also as a platform to educate his audience. And on opening day of Disneyland, they live streamed the whole thing. A little over half of the population of America tuned in to that fucking broadcast. That had never happened before in the history of American programming. It was incredible. But even still, like after the park was opened, that was just like the beginning of the hurdles. And there were so many hurdles just to get to that point. And it's like, it's such the human tendency to think like the opening day, that's the finish line. I just got to get there and then we'll be good. No, son, no, you're not good yet. Opening day was a mess. There were a billion different things that went wrong. The asphalt wasn't dry yet and it was super hot. So women's heels were sinking into the asphalt. There were no water fountains because there was a plumber's strike in the weeks leading up to the opening. And so Walt had to make a decision as to whether to have finished toilets or finished drinking fountains. And he picked the toilets. I think he made the right choice. But then everybody was mad at him. The crowds were mad at him for not having any drinking fountains because they thought it was a business strategy to force them to buy Coke, soda products. Food vendors. He didn't have enough money for like to do his own food for the park. And so he had food sponsors. He had all of these food companies become sponsors for the food at Disneyland. Disneyland Hotel. He knew he wanted a hotel for his guests, which was also a totally revolutionary idea at the time. It just wasn't done. Hotels were for businessmen who were traveling. That's it. There weren't hotels, like vacation hotels for families, because that just wasn't done back then. This was something new and innovative. He also did not have the money for it. Okay. The man sold he had a second property in Palm Springs. He sold that and put the profits of that into the building of Disneyland. He cashed out a life insurance policy that he had, put that into the park. Other employees were willingly, obviously, making donations into the investment of the park. He was totally tapped out, but he was scrappy. He didn't give up on his vision for his park. He was just like, okay, I just have to find a new way to do it. So there was this family that he was friends with, and the guy was in oil. He was an oil tycoon. And Walt was talking to him about his park and about the hotel. And this guy was interested. And Walt Disney signed away this contract, like, was making me nervous. And like, I knew it had all worked out, obviously, somehow. But like, when they were telling me the details of this contract, I was like, so stressed instantly. I'm like, Walt, no, why would you do that? So in the contract for the original Disneyland hotel, Walt Disney gave this man the rights to put up a hotel anywhere else in the United States and use the Disney name. And they got all the profits. Walt was just like leasing the land that the hotel was on to him. But, you know, because this person, this other man, I forgot his name. I'm not like terribly great with names. Sorry, everybody. He like was putting up all the money, the upfront money to get the damn thing built. He was the owner and operator. It just had the Disney name on it. And they paid Disney rent. But that stipulation of he can use the Disney name on any hotel in the country that he wants to build until like 2035 or 2055. I don't remember which one it was, but I was like, to this day? What the fuck, Walt? That's a long ass time. It must have been 2055 because that would have been 100 years. And that makes sense. As far as like a random number you're going to put into a contract, but whatever. Eventually, so that man died, and then his wife died. And so the hotel, the running of the hotel went to their oldest son, who had no interest in the hotel business. He apparently was just kind of overwhelmed by it. And the mom had told him before she died that she wanted, you know, if the hotel wasn't going to stay in their family, she wanted it to go back to Disney. Disney fucking lucked out, like the company of Disney, because Walt Disney obviously had died way before then. So Disney was able to buy back their hotel and was able to like open other hotels, other places, and use their own name. Oh my God, what a crazy contract. But again, at the time, Walt Disney was fucking hustling. He's just like, I got to get these things built, and I don't have enough money. I don't have any investors. So partnerships, sponsorships, this is the way to go. And then he used the 1964-1965 New York World Fair to such great advantage. It was so impressive. He had always been interested in humanoid audio animatronics. Which are what you see throughout the park today. Obviously he succeeded, but, again, it was always money, just like getting someone to see the potential in this technology and to invest in it so that they could invent it, wasn't happening until the 1964-1965 World Fair. Without giving a huge history lesson, there were a bunch of corporate businesses who like bought spots at the World Fair, but didn't have any exhibits. And they weren't like creative, imaginative people. They were business people. And so Walt Disney was like, again, hustling. And he ended up snagging four spots and had his entire team of Imagineers creating exhibits and attractions for the World Fair. So he had these corporate sponsors funding all of this tech that he'd been wanting to create for his parks. And all they had to do was just be patient, because once the World Fair was over, they got to bring all their shit back home with them. We have humanoid animatronic, audio animatronic technology because of the World Fair. So we have Moments with Abraham Lincoln and Pirates of the Caribbean, and any attraction that you see the humanoid animatronics, it's because of the World Fair and the hustling that Walt Disney did in order to get that technology funded at that time. It's because of the World Fair. We have It's a Small World because of the World Fair. I had no idea. No idea. Fascinating stuff to me. I mean, maybe you all are like, you've already like stopped listening. You pause this podcast and you're like, Amanda, just stick to what you're good at. You guys, it was fascinating. And it was also so inspiring to me as an entrepreneur myself to know it's always been hard. It's always been hard for people like me who have ideas that are bigger than what people can currently like imagine in their heads. And it's hard to get people to invest in that. It's hard to get traction in it, to get people interested. It's always been hard. But look at what he did. Can you imagine if he gave up? Can you imagine if he just said, well, I can't get any banks to invest in this, and that's how business is done. So I guess I'll just have to make a bunch of movies and slowly save money, maybe put it in an investment bank to an investment account to slowly accrue interest. He would have died. He would have died before being able to raise that kind of money for his park. Instead, he just got scrappy. He got innovative. He got creative. And that's why we have Disneyland. Incredible. It's so incredible. So go watch those documentaries. The first one is called Behind the Attraction. The other one, I forgot what it's called, something about the Imagineering story or something like that. They're so good. It's so inspiring and encouraging as a creative person. I think it would be inspiring even if you're not a creative person, because it just is, right? It's just the hero's journey. That's why even if you're not a sports person, you can hear a really great sports story of like the dark horse or the, you know, the scrappy person or the someone who got an injury and they came back. That's why it's inspiring, because it's just, we all have that inside of us, no matter what your journey is. And that really helped me a lot. And the last thing I want to share is my kids had their first dance competition this last weekend. And I'm so proud of all of them. They are so amazing. I love watching them work so hard. These kids work so hard. And it's all their idea, right? Like, I really am not the stereotypical dance mom where like, it's all my idea for them to do dance and I want them to be great so that I can brag about them and show off all their trophies. I don't give a shit about any of that. My kids are in dance because they want to dance. They want that. That's it. Period. End of story. If it was up to me, we absolutely would not be doing this because the schedule is crazy. It is fucking expensive. And it's exhausting. It's pretty all consuming. So if it were up to me, I would not be choosing this for my life. I do this because I love my kids. And I loved watching them. They've grown so much. Especially my younger two, because it's their first comp season at all. First time doing competition. And I loved seeing them get up on that stage and become an equal with other kids on their teams who have done comp for a few years, you know. My kids went up there and they're just like, I deserve to be here too. My youngest, Ozzy, she had to do a back walkover in one of her dances, and she's been super nervous about this back walkover forever, even though she's nailed it so many times. There was always this insecurity in the back of her mind that, like, today is going to be the day where I fuck it up. And when she was on that stage and she nailed her back walkover and she flipped her head up, the look of pride on her, that child's face was everything. And she just, like, glowed throughout the rest of her routine. She was just, like, shaking her hips and smiling all big and all the emotions. It was, I love seeing that. I love seeing that so much because she worked so hard. I've seen that child work on her back walkover every day for months. Every day. And she did it. And then Laurelyn, she tends to be like the quiet one. And it is not because she is shy. This is such a misconception. If a child is quiet and they keep to themselves, people assume they are shy. She's not shy. She knows exactly who she is. She's completely confident in who she is. She's just not a very big social person. She doesn't need or want. She has no desire to be like a social butterfly talking to everybody in the center of attention for everybody. That idea sounds terrible to her. I know how that feels because that is me too. Like, just, she just keeps to herself. But, you know, she's not like a jazz hands, like out there energy. And so being on stage, you have to bring that sort of energy. And she did. And it was so great to see her do that. Because I know that that's hard for her. Their jazz dance is a Wednesday style dance, because our studio, the choreographers were thinking, well, everyone's probably going to be doing Barbie stuff this year because of the Barbie movie. So what can we do to, like, set ourselves apart? Wednesday. Just fucking polar opposite. And I adore it. I am here for it so much. Yes. My God, she slayed in the Wednesday dance. Like, she was so in her element, just glaring at the audience. It was everything for my soul. I love her so much. I hate that wig. And I hate the wig that my AON has to wear too. I don't know why we're doing wigs. I do know why we're doing wigs this year. You can't do the Wednesday dance without the Wednesday hair. It looks amazing. And the other dance that my oldest AON has with her little, it's a bob, a platinum blonde bob, which shockingly looks really cute on her. She's got dark brown hair. She has my brown eyes. She's the only one of my girls that has my brown eyes. I don't know how that happened. I just assumed they would all have brown eyes because brown is a dominant gene, or so my science teacher told me. But the two middles have green, and then Ozzy has blue, although hers are kind of changing. I think she might end up with, like, green, like her other sisters. But yeah, AON is the only one who has my brown eyes. But anyways, she's got this dark brown hair. So she's got dark brown eyebrows and brown eyes. That platinum bob looks so fucking cute on her. It looks adorable. It's like, kid, you look cute. Yeah, the dance absolutely looks amazing with the wig. It's just kind of a bitch to be pinning. Actually, the wigs aren't as bad as the bodysuit that AON has to wear with her wig. Because you guys, trying to get a child who is sticky with sweat into a jumpsuit, bodysuit, spandexy thing. Oh my God. It's horrible. I was like, we might have to, like, dust you with baby powder or something next time because this isn't going on. Her leg, her foot was just, like, stuck. It was not going up her legs. It's horrible. Looks great on stage. Horrible. horrible, horrible for the moms, us moms backstage doing the quick change on sweaty bodies. Absolutely horrible, but it looked really great. And this was the first year that Eowyn has had a solo, my oldest. She's 13. Her first solo, she was so nervous. She woke up that day that she woke up. The first thing that she said was, oh, I'm so nervous. And then she like cuddled her Pooh Bear and like went back to sleep. She was so nervous. I'm going to get emotional. She went on stage and she was amazing. It was the best I've ever seen her dance. And I've watched that girl dance a lot. I watched so many dances. That was the best I've ever seen her dance. And it's just so incredible because like she still is only 9 months post-op from her knee surgery. And if you've been here with me for a while on this podcast, you'll remember me telling you in the summer about her going to nationals with her team. So she had her surgery in May, and nationals it was actually like 7 weeks and some change. It was just under 8 weeks away from her surgery date. And her doctor had told her like, absolutely no way. You won't be able to dance. You just won't be. And I said, well, why not? Why can't we try, you know? And so I had her in physical therapy days after her surgery. She was in physical therapy twice a week. And I also set her up with one of the instructors at the studio once a week for privates so that way she could be getting like some dance related exercise. And her doctor was constantly talking to me about what a bad idea it was. And her physical therapist was constantly talking to me about what a bad idea it was. But you know what? 10 days after her surgery, she was walking without crutches. And 7 weeks and some change after her surgery, she was on stage dancing with her team. She did it. She did that. And they won. They got to, that competition does best of the best. So like they take the first and second place groups from the week and have them perform, like compete against each other on Friday for best of the best. And then they hand out like, okay, you are now first place overall. Like you've won officially. So their contemporary, Eowyn's contemporary last season, got into best of the best. They got in as a second place. They were a tenth of a point away from first place that first time. A tenth of a point. Like craziness. And they won. They got first place at best of the best. I was so proud of her. She defied. She defied medical odds. She is incredible. But that wasn't like the end point. Just like, you know, the Disneyland story. It's like getting to opening day, getting to nationals. That was just the beginning. She had a hard time at the beginning of this dance season. There were so many times when she couldn't dance at class. She still went to class, but she couldn't dance. She had to take a break because her knee was hurting too bad. There were some times where she missed school because she had a 4-hour dance day the night before and woke up still in really bad pain. It was just this learning curve of like, okay, what can your body tolerate? And also she's growing. She's taller than me now, which is obnoxious. And we've noticed when she goes through growth spurts, the pain is worse because the ligaments are loosening. And so it kind of inflames a situation that's already a little hard. And it's just been this learning curve. And every time we went to the doctor, he was just an asshole, on like just an arrogant asshole. Just like, well, I told you she's dancing too much. I've been telling you this. And it's like, that's not helpful. Like, she did it and she didn't re-injure herself. Can you please put your protocol up your ass and help with this extraordinary case? Okay. She's an outlier. You can't treat her like you do all of your other patients, and all of your other patients are in there. Like, they're geriatrics. They're old. You can't put her in the same boat as them. So we were really on our own. And her dad, quite frankly, like, does not, him and I do not see eye to eye on how to treat Eowyn with her knee. He always wants to be super conservative, and say, let's just not risk it. Just, you know, if it had been up to him, she just would have been pulled from dance. She wouldn't have gone to nationals. She wouldn't have been able to do any of that stuff. And so it's just me over here standing by Eowyn's side, being the sole champion of her dreams and her desires and her wishes and believing in her and figuring out how we can make it happen. It's been a lot. It's been a lot. And so watching her this weekend do her very first solo and fucking kill it was everything. And it makes all of it worth it. Absolutely all of it. All of it's worth it. She ended up, so for those of you who don't know anything about the competitive dance world, your score puts you into a category of each competition is labels them a little bit differently, but they're in general, it's gold, high gold, platinum, elite platinum. And so just your overall score out of 300 automatically places you somewhere in there. And so they will at awards announce each number and which category they landed in before they do the overall placements with like first place, second place, third place, all the way through 10th place. So Eowyn's goal for herself was just to like place within the top 10 because it's her first performance of her first solo. She's just like, I just would love to place in the top 10, you know, but either way, I'm proud of myself. That was like her attitude going into it. She got Unmasked Elite, which is the top category for this competition. And she ended up placing third overall. The look on her face. I wish I had been recording, but I had no idea how the fuck was I supposed to know. The look on her face. She sat there and heard number 220, Haunted, Unmasked Elite. Just all of the feelings all over her face. And I'm in the audience screaming and just, it was the best. It was the fucking best. She was going against a bunch of amazing dancers and, you know, the dancers from the other studios. I don't know them, obviously. The dancers from our studio, I can tell you a lot of them have been doing solos forever. They've been doing comp longer than she's been doing comp. And she placed the highest from our studio from that night. I'm so proud of her. And it's not about the placement at all. But it was just so nice to bear witness to my daughter accomplishing that for herself because it meant something to her. I was in awe just watching her perform. I didn't care where she got placed. I care for her sake, not for my sake. I couldn't give a shit. But she did that. She did that. She's incredible. She's been through so much and she keeps persevering. And I'm able to help her with that because of the tools that I have at my disposal, the tools that I teach my clients. I was teaching to my kid when she was in horrific amounts of pain right after her surgery, helping her learn how to manage her pain. That was me. Helping her build up the mental fortitude to keep going, to not doubt herself, to not allow the doctor or her physical therapist to shame her or make her feel like she's doing something wrong. Just to hold space for like, that's their truth and they're doing their best to help you from what they know. And here's your truth. And they can both exist at the same time. They don't have to be wrong. We don't have to be right. We can both just live here like this. And being able to teach her that at such a young age and knowing that it's sticking, because look what she's doing. She wouldn't have been able to do this if it wasn't for the thought work that I've been teaching her to do. And I know that. I'm so grateful that I had those tools. I haven't always had these tools. I'm so grateful that I have these tools and I've like internalized them because I use them on myself. I teach them to other people and then I was able to teach them to my daughter. What a fucking gift. So we have a 3-week break before we're at the next comp. Comp season, craziness. But it's not that bad because we only have one comp a month for our studio, at least. I know every studio is different. And there are some like optional comps. Like there's an optional comp this weekend. I'm so glad I opted to not do any of the optional ones. I would cry if we had another one this weekend. It's so much work. It is so much. And I have to give myself props because like, this is the first time I've done a comp with 3 dancers on 3 different teams. We're there for like all day Saturday, all day Sunday. It's a lot. It's so much like planning and organizing and orchestration. And the day before, the Friday before was a shit. It was actually a dumpster fire of a day. My dryer was leaking carbon monoxide into my house. I started a load of in the dryer before I took the kids to school. And then I like drove through Starbucks. I did a quick Target run for the couple things that we needed, like snacks and bubblers and stuff that we were going to be taking to the competition. And then I swung by the UPS store to drop off an Amazon return quick and then came home to my carbon monoxide detectors going off. I opened the door and I could just smell gas and I'm like, oh my God, where's my dog? That's the first thought I thought of. Like, where's my dog? He's fine. He was fine. Thank God he was fine. Went upstairs, turned that shit off, pulled it out of the closet. I hate the arrangement of my laundry room. It's a laundry closet. It's just barely enough space for the stackable washer dryer to fit into. I absolutely hate it. It shares a wall with this, if you're watching the video, this closet that's right behind me that you can see is a second closet in my bedroom. And I only use it for storage. I could put that shit anywhere else. That shares a wall with my laundry closet. I wish that they would have just 86'd this extra closet bullshit for this bedroom and just made that space bigger. It's a nightmare. So yeah, I was dealing with the washer dryer situation, airing out my house. It was 9 degrees that day and I had my front door and open and windows open, obviously to get the smell of the carbon monoxide out of the house, trying to find someone who could come to my place the day of, because everywhere that I was calling was like Tuesday, Tuesday, Tuesday. I'm like, bitches, today, like now, please. I did finally find someone. He wasn't able to come until like 6 o'clock that night. And then panicking because my house is such a mess and I was feeling like insecure about someone coming into my house. My mom thankfully called right at the apex of my freak out with that and talked me off the ledge. And then I discovered that the dog had taken a shit underneath one of the bunk beds. I could see it because my kids are in the middle of a renovation project with their rooms. So their bedroom was in the bedroom upstairs because it's the largest room. And then their office slash art room is the bedroom that's downstairs. It's much smaller. And Eowyn one day just was like, wait, we should switch. So that way the upstairs room could also be like a dance practice area. So we can practice our dances, has the most space. So they took their mattresses and put those in the downstairs room. And they've just been sleeping with their mattresses on the floor. And now they like that and they don't want to go back to beds. Anyways, so I could see the shit through the slats of the bunk bed, thank God. And I was like cleaning that up. And I don't remember why I was on Laurelyn's bed. Oh, I was looking for comp jackets. That's right. Because they have these team jackets that they're supposed to wear for awards. And I was trying to locate all of them. And my kids love to take their clothes off and then just like shove them in between the mattresses. So I was digging through the mattresses, and this was right before I needed to leave for an appointment that I had. I was in the middle of the day. And her bed was wet, and I was like, oh no, oh no. Yep, the dog had pissed all over it. He was just terrified because of the alarms that were the carbon monoxide alarms that were going off. I don't know how long they were going off. I don't think very long because it all aired out pretty quickly. And again, he was fine. He didn't throw up at all. He wasn't acting weird. So thank God he didn't get that much exposure. God, you guys, I would have felt horrible. He is my soulmate. Like I've said this before and I'll say it again. He is the only male in my life who has consistently made every single cut in the last now almost 14 years. It'll be 14 years in April that I've had that dog. would have been devastated if anything had happened to him. So yeah, and my washing machine, I can't use it, right? Plus, she has this like really long pillow that doesn't have a cover. So the whole thing just needed to go in the washer and I can't put that on this washer because it's too small. But also I did not have time to take all of the stuff off of her bedding and bag it up and like get the detergent and put it in the car before I had this appointment. So I had to go in, have my appointment, come back to my house. I live outside of like the town that I live in is so small that we don't have a grocery store. Like there's nothing here. So I'm always having to go into the town next door to us, which is where my kids go to school. It's where they dance. It's really where we live, except we sleep over here. I hate living here. Grateful to have a place. I hate living here. I can't wait to move back to that city. It was a nightmare of a day. I had to come back, put all the stuff in bags, like strip her bed, the zippered mattress protectors. I have such a love-hate relationship for those because on the one hand, they really protect the mattresses from all accidents at all. Like they work wonders, but they're such a bitch to get on and off. Like, I hate it. Then took all that stuff. I was driving back to where I had just come from. And I get a call from my girl's dad because Ozzy was in the nurse's office for the third time that day. And like from the nurse's perspective, she couldn't really see that anything was wrong with her. But Ozzy was just, apparently she was just laying on the floor, just laying on the floor in her classroom. So she's like, she was being a nuisance. And I was like, all right, cool. I'll go get her. I'll just go start this load in the washer and go grab her. Because again, I was pretty sure that she was fine. She's done stuff like this before. She's seven, whatever. I go and pick her up. The moment she is in the car, she's like, I'm going to throw up. And I'm like, oh my God, seriously? So I have these trash cans in my car, and I always have like a disposable, like a plastic Target bag somewhere in the back. So I got the plastic Target bag quick, emptied my trash can out, gave her the trash can, and she was like, bleh. Oh my God. So I called her dad back and I'm like, you need to cancel like what you're doing and take this child, because I have stuff at the washing place. I was supposed to say the washing place. There's a word for that, Amanda. The laundromat. And I have this technician who's supposed to be coming as soon as an hour from right now. And then the 3-hour window. I cannot. I don't have the bandwidth. There's no way you're taking her. And luckily he did. It was such a shit show of a day. And mind you, it's the day before a comp. So like I had plans to get ready for the comp. I had between the three girls, I had, let's see, Eowyn has 7 costumes. Laurelyn has 4. And then Ozzy has 3. So I have 14 costumes between the three of them. I have 2 wigs, all of the like hair and makeup stuff, all of the food plans, the schedule, just so all of the dance shoes, water so that we don't fucking dehydrate, a blanket to sit on. There's so much fucking planning to go into a comp weekend. And I had done none of it because I was dealing with all of this shit all fucking day long and dealing with my emotions all day long. I was a mess. I was like crying. And it was one of those days where, you know, it's just like, wow, being single is really hard. This is hard. It would be really nice to have someone who like could share this burden with me. And the superficial thought is it would be really nice to have somebody to like just help me with all this stuff because I don't know what I'm doing. But the fact of the matter is that like whoever that person is, it's not their job to like be the one to fix all the things or even to know how to fix all the things. They would be floundering right alongside with you. But that's the thing. They would be floundering right alongside with you. It's the right alongside with you part. And it's someone who can talk you off the ledge when you're panicking about the state of your house and us, a stranger being it, who cares? It's the person who will remind you to like, hey, we are going to pause right now and go have some lunch. Okay. This crazy ass day is going to be here waiting for us when we are done with lunch. Let's go eat. We need to eat. It's the person who can just fucking hold you. Like the magic of a hug is just so you underrate it and you take it for granted until you don't have it. Someone to take care of you and you take care of them. And so life still sucks and it's still stressful and you still don't know what to do. And you still are like, how am I the adult in the room? I don't know how to handle this. But you're doing it together and you're holding each other through it. And it's hard to go through those days alone. And so after I let myself feel that, it's so important to just let yourself feel those things and to hold space for your story. Don't try to coach yourself out of it right away. That's my tendency. I'm working on it. Held space for that and that hurt and that wanting of someone who could take care of me and give me a hug. And then when I was ready, I asked myself, okay, how can I take care of me? And then I did those things. So when I got back from the laundromat, while I was, you know, the beginning of the 3-hour wait for the guy, instead of diving directly into catching up on all of the stuff I had to do for comp prep, I sat my ass down with some ice cream and a beer, and I watched another episode of that Disney documentary that I was telling you guys earlier about that I was obsessed with. I just let myself have a break. I hadn't had a break all day. I'd been going, 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 going all day long, putting out all of the fires and not succeeding because another one would always erupt. Then after I took a break, I got up and I was like, okay, one thing at a time. We're just going to do one thing at a time. You've done this before. This is not your first rodeo at the comp thing. Yes, this is the most amount of children, but it's all the same. It's just a few more costumes. Of course, it's more than just a few, but I'm just telling myself that because otherwise I would have been overwhelmed and I would have panicked and not gotten anything done. And that's how I got through that day. And don't worry, we did take Ozzy to the doctor. I had her dad take her to the doctor to get her checked out just on the off chance that it was anything to do with the carbon monoxide. I didn't think it was because, like I said, I started that load pretty much right before we left for school. Out of the six of us, the dog, my tiny little 16-pound dog, had the most exposure and he was fine. But she had been complaining of a headache all day long and then she puked. So just to get her checked out, it wasn't that at all. The doctor agreed, like, no, that's definitely not it. Swabbed her for all of the things because she's still puking the day before a comp. And I'm like, God, can we just be healthy? Everything came back negative. She was on the verge of ear infection. He said he could see the fluid buildup. So she wasn't complaining of her ear hurting yet. But that morning she had woken up with like a really stuffed up nose. So I think, putting my mommy doctor hat on, I think this is what happened. I think that she had some sinus congestion that and caused the postnasal drip, upset her stomach. When she threw up, there was no food in it. It was just water. It was liquid. And then she threw up one more time with her dad. And it was, again, just liquid. But then that was it. She was done throwing up. And the nurse at school had said, no, she said she didn't want to drink water. I don't know. I'm not sure if Ozzy had like actually eaten very much that day. And if her stomach was already feeling upset, she probably wouldn't have eaten. So I think postnasal drip in her stomach without any food or anything, it just kind of like upset her stomach. And I think she was also, I know she was stressed about having to go back and forth to the nurse's office and her teacher not believing her. Teacher has a right to not believe her, though. She's definitely been the girl who cried wolf many times. She puked. And that's it. She was fine Saturday. I'm really glad we got her started on an antibiotic right away before the pain started with the ear infection. I always feel so bad when my kids have ear infections because it hurts so bad. And there's really very little that you can do other than just get them the antibiotic and wait for it to work. But yeah, she went on Saturday and she kicked ass and got 3 platinums for her routines, and did her front back walkover. What even is that, Amanda? Her back walkover. But yeah, that was my Friday. It was fucking chaos. Absolute chaos. So Monday, on Sunday night, when we were done with the comp that day, I was really grateful they were running ahead of schedule. Saturday, we got out 2 hours ahead of schedule. And then Sunday, it was like an hour and a half. We were running ahead of schedule. Beautiful. Love it. Thank you, Masquerade. I dropped the girls off with their dad on my way home. So I came home by myself. I didn't have to do the school thing on Monday morning. And I actually gave myself the day off, which is very hard for me. I'm, again, someone who has a tendency to tie her worth to her productivity. I'm a Capricorn. I've got a lot of things going against me in the department of rest. But I made up my mind in advance that I was taking the day off Monday and that I was actually going to take the day off, that I wasn't going to, because typically what I do when I say that I take the day off is I still do stuff. It's just less things. So I get to call a day off and it's not really a day off. So this term bed rotting is something that I am stealing from the Low Life podcast. And he talked about it and I was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed. I love that. So I proper bed rotted on Monday. And it was the best thing because I didn't shame myself. Yay. I wasn't sitting there struggling with like, this is really nice, but I should fill in the blank of something that I should get done. No, sir, not today, Satan. I didn't do that. I sat there and fucking relaxed all day. I binged those two Disney documentaries, and which is a little disappointing because now they're done. I've finished them and I'm like, oh, I miss them. I only got up to pee or eat or let the dog out. I took a nap. It was beautiful. And I felt rejuvenated the next day. Bed rotting, absolutely necessary. And it's a totally different experience when you're doing it on purpose as opposed to like falling into a depression and then like, but you still set the intention of getting stuff done at your like peak productivity self. And then you spend the whole day shaming yourself for not being able to get up, not being able to get up and do the things, not being your peak productivity self. Two totally different experiences when you're doing it on purpose, intentionally. It is so rejuvenating. And I finally understand that now. And I hope that you can do that for yourself too. I understand not everybody is divorced and some of you have your children 100% of the time, and bed rotting with children, it looks a lot differently. You have to get up and feed them and take care of chaos. But do your best to just set a day aside sometime in the next month to do that, to take a proper day off where you do as little as possible and do it with intentionality out of love for yourself. And I promise you're going to feel rejuvenated. Oof. I have been talking for almost an hour and a half. I had a lot to say to you guys. I miss you. I love this space. I'm going to be devoting myself to this space again because a podcast was what changed my life. That's how I learned thought work and life coaching tools. And so I always knew from the very beginning, even before I had officially started my business, that I was going to do a podcast. I'm very passionate about this podcast and I refuse to allow myself to lose sight of that. I love you guys. Have a fantastic week. Are you living your one wild life to the fullest? You're not? Why the fuck not? What are you waiting for? The time to live is now, mama. Do not wait until your youngest is in college. Let your dreams hire me for an hour so I can explain how I can help you achieve any goal in your life. You've put yourself off long enough. It's time to pour into you. The link to schedule your 60-minute complimentary consultation is in my show notes. Join the community of Fuck It Moms by following me on Instagram and Facebook at Fuck It Mothering. That's fuck without the U. So F-C-K It Mothering. Make sure you subscribe to my channel so you never miss your weekly encouragement. And please rate, review, comment, and share. All of these things help with the algorithms, so that way when other overwhelmed moms are looking for encouragement, they can find me. Every month, I give away one of my favorite books and a Starbucks card to a lucky winner. All you have to do to enter is write a review or tag me in social media when you share an episode. See you next Sunday, gorgeous.